This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
It's Saturday, March the 10th, and you're very welcome to this special edition of the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. We are recording this in early to mid-afternoon on Saturday, and counting is continuing in the two referendums proposing changes to the Constitution in relation to the definition of the family and the role of carers. We had no official results up until a minute or two ago, but I think Cork South Central has just landed, and there'll be plenty more coming through. But the reality is that since the ballot boxes were opened at 9 o'clock this morning, it became pretty clear pretty quickly that both amendments would be decisively rejected. I'm joined by our political editor, Pat Leahy, and our political correspondent, Jennifer Bray, is at the Count Centre in Dublin Castle. Jennifer, I'll go to you first. Maybe you could just tell us how the day unfolded from your perspective.
Yeah, so obviously the ballot boxes opened at 9 a.m. and I think it became evident within an hour or so that the early tallies were showing very much kind of the vote leaning, not only leaning no, but often in some of the cases in different ballot boxes, decisive no votes on both the care and family referendums. Now, this will be no surprise, realistically, to people within government who have seen the writing on the wall over the last number of days. They haven't really said it publicly, but they knew, I think, that defeat was coming in the care referendum. They thought maybe the family referendum, which is extending the definition of family, that that would be salvageable. Having said the fact that they felt that, you know, the writing was on the wall, I don't think anybody within government predicted the scale of the no vote. Even they expected a very low turnout. I heard people talking about late 20s, early 30s during the week, and it looks like we'll fall somewhere around 40%. And what I can say is, like, I've been here since early, and, you know, I've covered the referendum here before, the abortion referendum and also the same-sex marriage referendum. I cannot tell you how different the atmosphere is. I mean, there are many different government figures around here today, different ministers. The Taoiseach was just speaking. Glum faces everywhere. And I think this is an absolute drubbing in some ways. And Taoiseach Leo Varadkar just described it there as not only a wallop, but two wallops. And I think they're already, the blame game is starting, and you're going to see, I think, potentially significant fallout because of the scale of the no vote.
Yeah, Pat, I mean, there's been a lot of talk over the course of the referendum campaign about the meaning of certain words, you know, the difference between to strive and to endeavour, or, you know, what durable means or doesn't mean. But from the perspective of the government now, maybe the question is, what's the difference between an embarrassment and a humiliation?
Yeah, about 20%, I'd say. I mean, it's bordering on a humiliation for the government, I suspect, by the time the official results come to be announced, then I think we can be reasonably confident that we'll have crossed that line from embarrassment into humiliation. And I mean, it's just a terrible day for the government. There is no two ways of presenting it. I mean, one could add, of course, that it's not just a bad day for the government. The government, it was the leader of the campaign, and the government pressed forward with the amendments, but they were supported by nearly everybody in opposition, with the obvious exception of Padraig Tobin's Éin Tú. Some independents, of course, also against, some independents in the Senate, which I think are likely, such as Michael McDougall, Tom Clonan, more likely to have been influential than many of the independents in the Dáil. And of course, the other group for whom this is a massive defeat is the largely government-funded NGO sector, many of whom were squarely behind this, even when some of their constituencies weren't. So I suppose there's lots of blame to go around for everybody. Its principal locus may be with the government, but it's certainly not. It's certainly not restricted to that.
And we should mention, Jen, that in our last few podcasts when we've touched on this subject, you know, we've looked at our own poll, and I think it's fair to say Pat and everybody else urged caution, the kind of numbers that were being indicated in the poll, which were a sort of a 3-to-1 yes, but with these vast amounts of people saying they didn't know enough about it, they weren't sure. So there was always that, you know, we always, you know, gave that caveat emptor warning to our listeners. But I have to say, I am still surprised at the magnitude of the defeat here. And I wonder how that came to be. And as Pat says, what a huge disjunction there is between nearly every political party in the state, an awful lot of the country's most major civic organisations all rowing in favour of this, and it being resoundingly defeated.
Yeah, and actually, just to give you a bit of colour on that, when you talk about all of the political parties and the opposition being, you know, in favour of a yes vote, when I came in this morning to Dublin Castle, one of the first people who I saw was Pádraig Tobin. He's the leader of Aintu, and he is by far the biggest winner from today politically. He's the only political party to have backed a no vote, effectively. And he looked absolutely delighted with himself. And Michael McDougall was also here. I spoke to him a little bit earlier on. Again, you know, he's been very much out in the airwaves and in the newspapers. And if he wasn't writing columns about it, he was in the letters page. So he's obviously also delighted. But I think onto the question about why this happened, there are so many reasons why this happened. I mean, this isn't just one thing that went wrong. So many things worked against the government. The first thing is that the whole thing was rushed from the get-go. There was this really... This drive to have it on International Women's Day, and this feeling that if they succeeded, that they could bask in this kind of warm glow of the women of Ireland would approve effectively, and they would have done something not only symbolic in itself, but symbolic on the day that it's on. And that completely backfired, I think, because they were holding a vote on International Women's Day when there was an argument from the no side coming in about taking out the word mother and woman from the constitution. I think it actually galvanised women to do the opposite to what they wanted. The second thing is that it didn't go far enough. It only recognised care within the family, not care within the community. And that was a major issue. Then you have the don't know, vote no. One of the biggest claims on the no side was that this has huge uncertainty. That actually is borne out in the advice from the Attorney General that was leaked to the Ditch website on Thursday night. That did say that there will be legal uncertainty to the term durable relationships. And then there's another issue that we touched on before in this podcast and on other podcasts. And this is in relation to, and you know, Pat mentioned kind of the NGOs. The National Women's Council, always they have this slogan, you know, it's called No Woman Left Behind, effectively. And from what I was hearing from, you know, even from being outside the polling station, from friends of mine, from people in the world of politics, was that there were schisms within groups that are covered in the umbrella of the National Women's Organization. Basically, that there were huge cohorts of feminism and feminists that believed that they weren't infusing disability rights into their feminism as they should have. And lots of voters probably felt that if they voted yes to this, they were leaving behind a whole cohort of women and indeed men. And then there's another issue even beyond that, and that's the government's role. Not proactive, didn't get out ahead of things, lackluster campaign, dodgy viral media clips. And the question really will be, firstly, how did they get it so wrong? But how did they get it so wrong on so many different counts? There will be fallout.
Yeah, and you know, I've already heard the finger pointing, particularly the opposition parties, many, Pat, as you say, who were technically at least signed up for this, you know, pointed the finger at some of the elements of government strategy, which you talk about. We've talked about before a little bit about how the complexity of the opposition, particularly on the care amendment, where it kind of comes from two different directions, you know, one from people who specifically object to the removal of the references to women and mothers in the wording of the current wording of the constitution, the other from people whose main concern was the acknowledgement of care and care outside the family as well wasn't strong enough. And I can see them already on my social media feed and on the media in general making the case that if this had been done properly, by which they mean the recommendations of the Citizens Assembly and the Oireachtas Committee had been brought more or less intact into the legislation, and maybe the thing hadn't been rushed so much as it was, that a model had been followed a little bit more like what happened with marriage equality or with abortion, well, then it would have passed. But I'm not so sure. What do you think?
I don't know, to be honest, because I think that so lots of people wanted justiciable rights put in for carers. The government was never going to agree to that. Now, the Attorney General's advice did go on to say that that people would undoubtedly rely on this in court cases, but the government didn't present the argument that they were inserting justiciable rights into the constitution, and therefore that wasn't enough for lots of people. Would it have passed had justiciable rights been in the proposal? It's hard to say. I mean, you would have to see what exactly that proposal would be, to what extent those justiciable rights could be circumscribed by law, what would be the likely cost to the Exchequer. All those sort of issues would have come into play in that, you know, parallel universe referendum. But I'll tell you one thing, Hugh. So, I mean, I don't know, obviously it's a hypothetical, we can't say with any certainty one way or another, but I will tell you one thing. No government is going to go near this for quite some time. And I noticed that the first major U-turn of the day and the, you know, the first political consequence of this, I suppose, is I just saw Mary Lou, or I heard a clip from Mary Lou saying that contrary to previous assurances, they were not going to rerun these referendums.
Yes, you were there to hear that, weren't you, John?
I was, yeah. It was interesting. So Mary Lou McDonald arrived, huge media scrum, as there always is for her and for Sinn Féin. And she, one of the first questions she was asked, because this came up during the campaign, because Sinn Féin obviously did in the end, despite some kind of internal rumblings, they did back a yes, yes. And she was asked, you know, you previously said that if you were in government the next time around, that you would rerun the campaign. And this, the answer this time was very different. She said that there's no question of Sinn Féin rerunning the referendum as it was currently phrased, because it had been, by all intents and purposes, to all the results are coming in, that it had been definitively defeated. And that is a U-turn, effectively. I think it was interesting as well, Mary Lou McDonald, is that she was heckled by members of the public. I mean, I think they're probably elements on the right. Some of the faces may be well known to some people on social media. But it was very interesting to see her. You know, people were shouting at her. They were calling her a traitor. She was, I think, deeply uncomfortable with what was unfolding outside Dublin Castle. And she didn't hang around too long. But it was an interesting spectacle. And after that, actually, all of the political parties, whether it was Leo Varadkar or Roger O'Gorman, also did a press conference. They did those press conferences then upstairs. They're doing them now instead of outside, where there are members of the public waiting, recording, maybe citizen journalists, if you want to call them that, which might be too, actually might be a little bit too complimentary.
Sounds like a bit of a push to me, yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned Roderick O'Gorman there. Can I ask you, because you wrote a piece on the back of that leak to the Ditch website about the Attorney General's advice, and you compared some of the paragraphs in that advice with certain things that Roderick O'Gorman had said on the record. And I've seen other ones as well, other media interviews he gave. Obviously, it's not as serious if there's a disjunction between that advice and media interviews as if it contradicts things which he said in the Oireachtas. But one way or the other, does he have questions to answer?
Yes, I think. And actually, when I was in the constituency results centre, where they feed in the results constituency by constituency, and we were doing a piece for video, and I came out afterwards and Roderick O'Gorman was standing outside, and I have to say he looked absolutely crestfallen, and his staff were around him, and they looked absolutely exhausted. But I think in relation to the leaking of the Attorney General's advice, what happened on Thursday evening is that it appeared in the Ditch, and they put up two different articles in relation to the care provision and the family provision. And later on, that night, they published the letter in full. I was on that evening and covering and following up the story. And I can tell you that there was war. War probably is a bit too far, but there were serious words being had within the coalition about how this advice got out. It's very rare.
This is definitively true.
Yeah.
People were furious about it. Yeah. It's also, of course, against the law to leak the AG's advice in this fashion.
Yes, so that there's a lot of questions being asked about that in and of itself. But in fairness, it's a scoop. A scoop is a scoop. And if I was offered the story,
sure,
I would have bitten someone's hand off to publish it. So that's fair. But I think in terms of the advice, the way it was kind of presented, I suppose, and it's not even a criticism per se of the Ditch, because they can present things whatever way they want. It's not for me to say what media outlets should do, but it was kind of presented in the light of legal uncertainty, and the way it was picked up online by people who didn't read the full article. They read the headline and then underneath said the government were clearly lying to us, and it took on a life of its own online, that the government tried to get ahead of behind the scenes. They were trying to talk to journalists and say, well, it actually, you know, it says this and that. Too late, it's out and it's been portrayed a certain way. What the advice actually said was, yes, that there is legal uncertainty around how the courts would interpret this phrase, durable relationships. And there was also legal uncertainty about whether the phrase endeavour is stronger or weaker than the phrase strive, which is what they wanted to strive to recognise care within the home. But on the other side, it actually did make the case for the Yes campaign in some ways, because it said that if they introduced this provision recognising care within the home and striving to recognise it, that actually would, I think the words were, there is little doubt that it would have put an onus on the state to actually recognise that care. And such an onus would have taken place on the state that it would result in a higher number of litigation cases, legal cases, effectively being brought, including by people who could be quite vulnerable. But like I said, too late. You know, the advice was leaked, and whatever it said, I think it actually fed into the No campaign more than it did the Yes campaign.
But that wasn't the case made in public by the government. They were not saying that we are creating new causes of action in that people can take to the courts in defence of their rights or in pursuit of their rights. So, I agree with Jen. I think that the leak of the advice, so it came very late on, and the margin of victory for the No side would suggest that it wasn't decisive. The thing was done and dusted at that stage. But I think it certainly played into a move to know that a lot of politicians around Leinster House were suggesting, and I know you did a piece about this as well during the week, Jen, I was picking it up as well. A lot of politicians were saying over the course of the week, they felt that as people had tuned in, as they always do in the final few days of a campaign, that the thing was swinging away from the government. And it's worth, I suppose, mentioning those polls as well, Hugh, and all the published polls, including our own, which was done at the very start of the campaign, suggested that it would go through rather easily. But importantly, our poll as well suggested that the more people knew about the proposals by the government, the less likely they were to vote for it. And we said at the time that this, you know, was likely to lead to a closing of the gap between yes and no as the campaign went on. And one final point about the polls is, you know, we polled, I guess, at the start of the campaign. We deliberately didn't do it later on in the campaign because it's notoriously difficult to poll a standalone referendum that people are not engaged in because you have this huge uncertainty about turnout, and we see it in the sort of turnout figures that we're having today. And a lot of those figures that our poll and other polls were recording in terms of voting intention for the referendum, they were based on general election levels of turnout. And of course, that's not what happened in the end. And predictably, it wasn't what happened in the end.
I'd still love to know a little bit more about what happened. I regret a little bit, I think for understandable reasons, exit polls are expensive to do and people tend to save them for bigger and more newsworthy electoral processes, and there's got to probably be some of those later in the year. So we didn't really get exit polls, or we haven't really dug into, you know, how much of a swing might have happened in the last week or so. I mean, we do know things. I mean, the other thing is, isn't it, about polls, Pat? I mean, let's be honest about this. People sometimes lie. I mean, they lie to themselves. 75% of our one told us that they were going to vote. It was never going to be 75% vote.
No, it wasn't. That's right. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, the record of Irish Times Ipsos polls immediately before general elections is really excellent. The last number of general elections, the final poll of the campaign has been pretty much bang on in terms of the final result. But it is poll, but referendum polls are obviously very different.
We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be back after this.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
And you're welcome back. Jen, what happens now? Is there just a bunch of people beating each other up, blaming each other, pointing the finger for 3 days, then everybody forgets about it and moves on?
Honestly, yes. I think so. I think there'll be a couple of days of the blame game. It has already started. It started at 10 a.m. this morning. I'm not joking. The text started coming in from people in government being like, well, actually, if you were asking questions, you should probably be asking this person why they did this. And, you know, why was I held international? They're flying around from all different quarters. And I'm going to be real. I love that stuff. So, you know, I was thoroughly enjoying that. And it's about time this government start briefing against each other, quite frankly. But I think what will happen is, you know, Leo Varadkar just did a press conference just before we started this podcast. And he came into the room and he said, look, you know, the responsibility for this failure basically rests with the government and me with the head of government. And I accept that. And he said, I was wrong. And he said, the public are right. So I think that's an attempt by him to stop that and basically say, right, the book stops with me. Anyway, let's move on. So he gave the example before. He said, you know, Enda Kenny previously said that sometimes the electorate gives the government a walloping, and he said it's a double walloping. And he said, you know, this government has won some referendums and now we've lost some referendums, and that he was saying there's not that much of a link between the result of a referendum and the electoral success or failure of a government. And to a certain extent, that is true. It depends on the topic and it depends on the stability of the government. Is this something that the opposition are able to bring the government down on or force like a motion of confidence when they all pushed for a yes vote? No. So even earlier on, Maurice Quinlivan, a Sinn Féin TD, he was out and he said that Roderick O'Gorman should resign. Cue Mary Lou MacDonald arrives to Dublin Castle. She's asked the same question and she says, I think they should all resign. And the reporter who was asking said, no, Roderick, should he resign? They should all go. And on the exchange went back and forth. And I think because it's very difficult for the opposition who, you know, rode in behind a yes, although I will say Sinn Féin were so unenthusiastic, were Sinn Féin, that on the day of the vote, Mary Lou MacDonald on her Instagram stories, you know, they're gone after 24 hours, and I was having a scroll through, and she put a story up saying, whatever you do today, just make sure and vote. I mean, that is hardly a rallying call from the opposition on the day of the vote. So I think it's more tricky for the opposition. I think eventually this thing will die down, but it is hugely embarrassing. And Leo Varadkar denied that there would be an embarrassment from international headlines, you know, but there will be international headlines that say on International Women's Day, the Irish public voted to keep, and they'll call it the Women in the Home clause. So it's embarrassing. It's humiliating. It does question his judgment. Yes, a little bit. But what are the long-term ramifications? Probably not all that much.
Well, what do you think about that, Pat?
So I take a slightly different view. I agree with Jen that the losing of a referendum, the losing of this referendum, is not necessarily fatal for a government in a subsequent election or anything like that. And there are enough examples of, you know, successful governments. Bertie Ahern, a couple of months before the 2002 election, lost a referendum on abortion. He went on to, you know, get within touching distance of an overall majority. So it is not a rule of politics that a loss in a referendum, you know, presages election loss. But what I will say is that it is clearly a political failure on the part of the government. If you leave aside the opposition for a moment, it's clearly an enormous political failing on the part of the government to agree the wordings that it did, which were, you know, confusing, unconvincing, to run a campaign, to rush it through the Dáil, guillotine debate in the Dáil, to have no pre-legislative scrutiny, and then to run a campaign that was at best lacklustre and unenthusiastic. So all those sort of political failures and the lack of judgment at the top of government that they bespeak, if that continues throughout the next 6 months, then they're very likely to make a mess of the election campaign as well. And so I think that the lack of judgment and the political failures that led to this result, rather than the result itself, are what threatens the government. What the result today has done, I think, is to shine a light on those political failures and poor judgment. And unless those failings are fixed, then I do think they're in trouble.
Is there a broader lesson in terms of the referendums and the way that they're handled, Jen? I mean, one of the things that strikes me, thinking back now over the last few weeks, is that the reality is that despite what some strong campaigners on both sides very honestly believed, that these things were really serious and could have a really impact, serious impact one way or the other, most people didn't think that. It felt kind of low stakes, and people described them as symbolic, and there was some argument about whether they're purely symbolic or not. But they really didn't matter that much. So that gives, you know, an open docket for people to just, you know, get an opportunity to kick the establishment. And that's one way I would just read the result today, is this was promoted by the establishment. It reminds me in that sense of a couple of the anti-EU referendums. People thought the stakes were low. As it turned out, in that case, the stakes weren't that low and they were right to do it again.
Yeah.
But in this case, everybody's just going to move on, being satisfied, having given their kicking.
Well, if there, I mean, yes, actually, but I think if you're asking, is there a broader lesson to be learned, which I think you're asking, on this, for me, what it is that if there are future, well, there will be future governments, obviously, but if there's a future government that is considering putting a proposal to the people in the form of a constitutional amendment, you want to be very sure exactly what you're asking people. And you want to be very sure that it's not portrayed in a wishy-washy, symbolic way. You want to be able to tell the people, if you vote yes, here is exactly what's going to happen. And I think that's the core, the crux of the issue, was that people looked at this and said, well, this could mean this, this could mean that, it could go here, it could go there. I don't know, I'm going to vote no. So I think any future government, you want to be very clear, if you remove this and replace it with this, here is exactly what happened. Also, the AG's advice, I know it is not the done thing to publish the Attorney General's advice, and I know there are very good reasons for that, so I'm not naive in that way. However, I do think there will be a benefit in the future to publishing some form of independent legal advice alongside questions that maybe perhaps are open to interpretation. Because even people who I spoke to were coming, we did a vox pop outside a polling station yesterday, and so many people said, I feel like the government were hiding something from me. I feel like they were being underhanded. I feel like they weren't telling us all the information that they had. And then, you know, all the, we hear all these things in the last minute. So that's the lesson. Be exactly sure what you're asking people and don't overcomplicate it. And make sure you know what people understand, what the ramifications are.
Also, don't do referendums unless people actually want them.
Yeah, and don't think that you can buy women's votes on International Women's Day just because it's Women's Day.
And is there any sense of that, Jen? I'll put this question to you, Jen. Is there any sense with this that the apparently inexorable progressive tendency of Irish politics of the last 20 years, the various liberalisations of getting out of people's private lives, allowing them to divorce, giving women reproductive autonomy, LGBTQ rights, all that kind of stuff, that maybe this is a small fork on the road or a stop to that gallop?
Oh, God, I wish I could give you the answer, yes or no. I don't know. I do think that realistically, those proposals that came before, they were higher stakes in many ways. I mean, in the abortion referendum, you know, we were talking about, you're talking about women whose lives could potentially have been at stake, you know. And I think what we've learned is that there's a huge element of Irish society, I think, maybe huge is overstating, but there's a lot of people, I think, who would rail against what they might see as this kind of creeping, as one man said to me yesterday, the woke agenda. And there's a bit of that, but I think realistically, it's very hard to compare this referendum to the ones that went before. I just think they're apples and oranges, you know, they're completely different. Is it a fork in the road? I don't know. One really interesting thing a politician said to me during the week that they will be watching for in this referendum is there's a debate that played out online on social media, and that leaned heavily no. And then there was kind of the debate in the Dáil Chamber and at the press conferences of the NGO. And what they said to me was they were going to watch very carefully to see which side was reflected more in the outcome of the referendum. And not saying that like it's Twitter that won or anything like that, but the arguments that were playing out, and realistically I'm talking about WhatsApp here and other social media sites, that has a bigger sway than perhaps we would give it credit for.
Pat, a different kind of politics in any way?
I mean, I'm not sure about the fork of the road stuff, Hugh. I mean, one of my WhatsApp correspondents from in around government was suggesting that, you know, we had passed peak liberalism now, you know. And I mean, I do think that there is probably a not insubstantial constituency that is more socially conservative than its political representatives. And that is probably has not been really catered to in the last number of years.
So, for example, I see a lot of women, female citizens, saying the National Women's Council doesn't represent me, and I'm a woman. That type of thing.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, certainly, you know, to go back to a point that we made earlier, I suppose those who purport to speak for women and workers in the trade union movement and people with disabilities, all those who purport to speak for those people, they all backed the referendum. But clearly very many workers and women and people with disabilities didn't back it. And I think those organisations certainly have some soul searching to do on it. I mean, I think that the general trend in society, you look at, you know, kind of polls and look at the, you know, the views of young people and that, the general trend in society over a longer timescale is clearly a liberalising one. But I think that any future government will be very careful about future so-called liberal amendments to the constitution. I think they will be, they want to be very certain that there is widespread public backing for what they want to do. And I suppose, you know, it's not going to happen for this government, but might be a question for the next government and for, you know, those who want to see more social and economic rights put into, justiciable social and economic rights put into the constitution. So I think, you know, any government in the future will certainly think twice about that. We'll want to be very sure of winning a campaign before it embarks on one.
Last thing, John, you told us on a previous podcast how much you loved a good count. There you are. You're at a good count. Are you going to be there till all hours of the night? How long is this process going to take? I'm not sure what time people will be listening to this podcast, but will it get wrapped up before close of business, 10 o'clock tonight?
Listen, honest to God, I had this sort of pipe dream of being out in time to watch the Ireland-England rugby match. It ain't happening for me. But, you know, I absolutely love this stuff. Whether it's, almost the result to me is almost irrelevant, because either ways, it's absolutely fascinating. And particularly in a no vote, like there's the atmosphere around here, I can't convey it enough, is really bad. Like all of the government representatives look completely miserable. Apart from Leo Varadkar, who kind of came out and gave it his best shot at looking like, ah, sure, you know, 13th rejection of a referendum, it's happened 12 times before, we move on. But we expect that from him, in fairness. But yeah, I think the results are coming in a lot more slowly than I would have hoped. They'll come in constituency by constituency. I have a feeling I'll probably be here maybe till around 9 or 10. But that's okay, because I'm enjoying myself.
Well, I hope you continue to enjoy it. Thanks very much for joining us. Thanks also to Pat. Thanks to our producer, Suzanne Brennan, our engineer, JJ Vernon. We'll be back with our regularly scheduled meetings next week. But until then, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and thanks very much for listening.